Hey everyone, welcome to Plot Spackle. I'm Eric. Let me tell you, there's this really good sushi place off the strip, and it's not downtown. Well, I guess it is actual Las Vegas. It might be Paradiso. I'm not sure, but it's a really good sushi place called Yama Sushi. You should definitely check it out. I'd say tell them I sent you, but I've only been there once, and they don't actually know me.
I'm Richard, and I actually have listened to Claire de Lune while watching the Bellagio Fountain.
And I'm Richard. And I'm Jonathan.
Wow, two Richards today.
Two Richards. I'm John, and I have never lost any money at a casino.
I haven't either, John.
Nor have I.
Oh, well, moving on. Today we're going to be talking about Ocean's 11.
It's true. Ocean's 11. We'll kind of go right into some of the things about the film. It opened on the 10th of August in 1960, starring Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr., and the rest of the Rat Pack.
That's not the movie I watched.
Yeah, that wasn't the movie I watched either.
Yeah, it's Ocean's 11, classic Ocean's 11.
Oh, we're going with the newer Ocean's 11, the newer, hipper Ocean's 11.
The better looking Ocean's 11.
The slightly less inebriated Ocean's 11?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. In which case, we're going with Ocean's 11 that opened on the 7th of December 2001, starring George Clooney, Brad Pitt, Bernie Mac, Matt Damon. It had an $85 million budget and earned back $38 million of that on its opening weekend, to a total gross in the U.S. of $183 million, worldwide about $450 million.
All right. So, as we know, we're going to be talking about a movie, and we're going to get into spoilers. So I'll give you a little laydown of the plot of the movie. And if you haven't watched the movie, once again, why are you listening to this?
And because second, we're really interesting people.
And second, go and watch this movie.
It's fun.
Luckily, you are listening on a podcast. You can pause this. It's not very difficult. I mean, sometimes it is, but...
Now, Ocean's 11 is about one Daniel Ocean, who, after leaving prison for a great number of crimes, lying, stealing, fraud, he's a con man, decides he's going to do a big job and rob three casinos in Las Vegas at once. With the help of, get this, 11 people.
Other people.
11, yeah, other people.
It's 12 people.
12 people total.
But it's his 11 people.
Yeah, it's Ocean and his 11. Now, they go into this, it's a big heist, there's some twists and turns. We find out that part of his motivation is to screw over the guy who is with his ex-wife now. So Ocean and his 11 go in to steal the money. Will they do it? Oh, of course they do it, because that's the purpose of a heist film, is the thief's winning. And so now we can move on to our plot holes.
All right. So our first plot hole is when they are mid-heist, Danny Ocean has actually been pulled from it, because now Benedict actually knows that it's him, and so he gets brought by Benedict's goons to a nice little room where there are no cameras so that he can be introduced to the business end of Bruiser's fists. But in the film, we see Bruiser faking a beatdown so that the mooks outside know that Danny's getting beat up and he's definitely there. However, earlier, Danny, in a fairly loud voice, tells Bruiser, "Not now!" If the mooks outside can hear the fake getting beat up, how come they didn't overhear Bruiser and Danny talking earlier?
So I think with this plot hole, with Bruiser, I think he's actually faking the beatdown closer to the door, so they have a better chance of hearing him.
I don't know. They show him moving all around the room in the film.
Yeah, but when he's moving around, he's also like smashing up against the wall. He's, I think he breaks a chair.
At least moves it around. You just really have to look at the purpose of that room. It is a place to show people business. He makes a specific point that There are no cameras here. That means they're going to want privacy. I would assume that they would have audio privacy as well.
Maybe it's just a matter of projection, too. I mean, there's a difference between being loud and projecting your voice. And so I think he might have been pretty loud when Danny says, like, whoa, calm down. Not yet, you know, you don't have to beat me up. And Bruiser's like, oh yeah,
sorry, I forgot. Danny, I forgot.
Yeah, when he's later, he's actually purposefully making a lot of noise. In fact, that might have been a new thing for the two guys outside, as they usually don't hear sound. And so they know, oh, this guy's getting really beat up this time.
Richard, does that work for you?
Sounds good to me.
All right. Now, part of the Eleven's plan hinges on a pinch. It's a device that produces an electromagnetic pulse. When they activate it, the power in the city is knocked out, but not for the various electronic devices our heroes bring. How could they descend the elevator with an electromagnetic cable while simultaneously knocking out the security sensors?
So, what we have to do is we have to actually look at what an EMP does to electronic devices. Conveniently, I looked that up, and the major thing that an EMP does is it causes sparks to jump across circuits, which will short them out. That's why electronics get messed with. So, they're using electromagnets. That's a fairly simple circuit. So maybe there's no sparks that can actually jump across.
Or my thought on it is they specifically steal the pinch. The one that they go for is the biggest one that's available at the time to knock out the entire city of Las Vegas for 30 seconds. And so you see in the film, it actually gets driven away from the casino before it gets set off. If it's just hitting like three or four substations, knocks out the city's power grid, it'll take down the casino, but not necessarily. That's just because the casino's dependent on the city for its power, where all of Danny's crew is using self-powered things like the electromagnet winch, their little remote control. They're outside the pulse radius, even though the majority of the city is affected and brought down by it.
But we do know that the batteries in the detonator are affected. So,
or there's just crap batteries.
Yeah, maybe they just didn't put them in right. They got loose.
Because they never blame the pinch on the batteries. It's just, did you check the batteries?
They do blame the pinch on taking out their ear comms. So they don't know that potentially setting off those the bomb to blow the vault door could actually kill Lynn. So we do know that the pinch gets to them.
Uh-oh.
So that's why. Another thing that they probably did is they could have built a Faraday cage. Now, kids, here's a little science experiment you can do. Take your phone and put it in the microwave. Don't turn the microwave on. That's going to be a $500 mistake. Oh, wait, no. It's a lot more than that now. If you're listening in the future, phones used to be like $500. Now they're a lot more. But anyways, if you put your phone in a microwave and try and call that phone, you won't get reception because your microwave is acting as what's called a Faraday cage. It blocks energy waves. That's why you don't get cooked when you're cooking food. So, I'm proposing that because they had to use the pinch, they purposefully built the major electronics that they had to use to withstand that. That's why I think their equipment, or their at least the major equipment, didn't get messed up. Because it was protected.
But some of the smaller things did. Like the comms, which wouldn't have the room for a Faraday cage.
Exactly. I don't think I really explained what a Faraday... I showed you where you can find a Faraday cage. But an actual Faraday cage is it's wire mesh. And it catches electromagnetic waves. And smaller things don't really benefit from that. But larger things, like the electromagnets they're using to hold themselves in the elevator shaft, can be used.
Alright, so I guess that covers that.
Alright, hopefully, if you have any problems, feel free to message us at our Twitter account. Alright, next plot hole. Okay, so this plot hole deals with the flyers for the hookers. Where do they come from? So Danny and Linus don't bring them down into the vault, and Yang doesn't... I think I keep messing up his name. I think I called him Lin or Ling or earlier.
Why are you so racist?
I don't know. Probably in my blood. Something like that. Anyways, I know his name is Yang, though. So Yang doesn't have enough room in the fake cart to carry the flyers with him. The bags are placed in the decoy van before SWAT shows up, so the other team members couldn't have messed with the bags. Therefore, the flyers that are in the van must have come from the vault. So where do those flyers come from?
The flyers came from the truck.
Well, there's two sets of flyers.
Well, yes, there's two sets of flyers, but there wasn't a lot of flyers, and the flyers don't actually show up in the vault until after the fake SWAT team makes it in. So they could have brought it in with their equipment. They bring in some bags and some other stuff. I mean, we see in the movie itself that there aren't actually any flyers scattered around the room before they slide the bomb in. And so that could have been there. Now, for the flyers in the van itself, I'm assuming that they put them in the paneling. I'd be willing to bet that the bombs that they used to blow up the bags were also in the paneling.
It's true. I mean, the whole thing was run by remote. I mean, there could have just been a little, like, the entire door with the sensor. They could have been up in the front seat because there's nobody up there. There's loads of spots where it could have come from in the van. Or, I mean, there's not a whole lot of flyers in the vault scene anyway.
No.
I mean, if you print out a lot of stuff, paper is, paper's very flat, guys.
It is.
You could have fit, like, they could have fit, like, a little bit of paper in there with Yin, or Yang. I'm doing it too.
Yeah, in there with Yang, because they did have the cylinder put in a square cage. And so you could have fit some sheets of paper in those corners.
I mean, they probably had to make the cart feel as heavy or as close to what a regular cart would feel like. So maybe they used paper as sort of an offset for Yang's weight.
Yeah, so the offset for Yang so they could guide it. And also, it brings up a question, though. What actually was in the bags? Because they needed to be heavy, and they couldn't have brought up enough paper to fill the bags for the weight. So my thought is we know that they kind of blew up their vault a bit when they opened the door. They loaded it up with debris, maybe some of the stuff from the vault they weren't planning on stealing.
Empty cash boxes.
Chips. Some of the smaller denominations that might have been there.
That works for me.
Yeah, they put in the bags, they send the bags up, bags get put in the back of a van, and then they blow the van. We don't actually get to see the inside of the van alive after that point, or not destroyed, because it's on fire. And so if they had stuffed bombs and paper into the paneling, there'd be no evidence.
Yeah, I guess the only evidence you'd really see would be actual paneling, but maybe they painted the paper paneling or something. I don't know. I'm not going to go too deep on that. I actually agree. I think they did hide some of the flyers in the van as well, like, thinking about it.
And the ones in the vault, like we said, our SWAT team could have brought down the majority of them with them. And then when we huck a bomb in there to blow stuff up, it just scatters everything around.
Yeah, so they just threw some piles in the corners when they came down and set the bomb off, and flyers get strewn everywhere.
And like we said, there's not that many flyers. It could have been a single ream of paper that weighs about 5 pounds.
Or about 30 feet of sweeping the Las Vegas Strip.
Alright, so that brings us to our biggest and final plot hole. So, a dollar bill is pretty light, but $163 million is really heavy. It doesn't seem plausible to fit that amount of money in only 16 duffel bags, carry it out, and not spend all the money to deal with the resulting back problems. Money is like water, heavier than you think.
It's true. It's very light in small quantities and pretty heavy in large quantities. But it's not as necessarily as unlikely as we want to believe, and it is certainly doable in the film. So, according to uscurrency.gov, each dollar bill, regardless of denomination, is going to weigh 1 gram. If it was all $1 bills, our $163 million is going to give us 359,000 pounds.
That's in $100 bills,
that's
right?
$1 bills. If we did it in $1 bills, if we do $100 bills, like they generally use in casinos for just storage, I mean, that's just generally used today because cash transfers are generally done through credit via bank, and so the largest denomination generally found is going to be $100 bills. Even if it's $100 bills, that's still going to be 3,593 pounds. It is more than a ton of dollar bills.
Yeah,
see literally.
See what I mean? Like, there's no way they're carrying that out. That's just too much weight. There's only 8 of them. They're carrying around.
And they're all carrying 2 bags as well.
It's
like
true.
400 pounds a piece.
Now, if we had done this in my original one, we could have gotten away with it really easy. However, we can still do it in our $163 million.
Wait, why could it have been done in the original one and not this one?
Well, the original one, it's a slightly lower amount of money that gets stolen. And currency, they used to use a lot higher denominations because they used $500 bills, $1,000 bills. They had a $5,000 bill. There was up to a $10,000 bill used for bank transfers, like I said, but now all of that's done via credit. Uh-huh. In our 2001, it's unlikely to be using $10,000 bills because those were only used by banks. However, while the $500 and $1,000 bill were officially unsupported by the Federal Reserve, they are still honored as legal tender, as anything is printed by the U.S. government after 1913.
Uh-huh.
So if Benedict, our very, very precise man, is carrying $500 bills or $1,000 bills because he likes things to be nice and neat, then it can easily be done. If it's $500 bills, then it's only going to end up weighing 718 pounds, which means, it's going to be about 90 pounds a person.
That's a lot easier.
It's a lot, but it's about the same amount of gear as your standard Marine carries with them. These are not Marines.
No, one's an old guy.
And one's a 100-pound Chinese person. Chinese man, sorry. Oh my gosh.
One is Yang,
who is definitely stronger because he's the acrobat.
That's true. He's all muscle.
However, if you do $1,000 bills, which were also still in circulation and still available, though rare, that drops us down to a mere 360 pounds. You're carrying only 45 pounds a person.
Which is really not a lot.
That's, 20 pounds per bag. It's really simple. And
you could definitely get out of that casino at a brisk pace like they do in the movie.
It's certainly doable. And I looked at how much money it looks like they have, how big this is. It's not bad.
Like,
it's easily fittable in like your standard duffel bag.
Like, seriously, you guys can't see this because this is an audio podcast, but Richard has this crazy spreadsheet all spread out with, like, for example, if we wanted to know exactly how much $2 bills would take up, like how much space and how much they would weigh, Richard knows that.
I do. Interesting note. If the entire vault was done in $2 bills, it's actually 37% of all dollar bills in circulation in 2001.
Bills.
Yeah. It's 37% of all $2 bills in circulation in the year 2001.
Whoa.
All of them.
Also, Richard did go the extra mile and actually emailed the company that he believed made the duffel bags.
At least a duffel bag company.
Yeah, I actually just went and talked to a duffel bag company about the bags in the film and had them look at it and tell me which bag they thought was closest to it. And so, like, with the amount of volume inside the duffel, with the size that we see of the stacks of cash in the film compared to George Clooney, it's a lot of money, but it's not that much money. He's going to have to be using primarily $1,000 bills with a bunch of $500 bills and then maybe a couple stacks of hundreds in order to be stealing $163 million in that amount of space with that little amount of weight to be carried.
All right, homework, kids. Figure out the mix of hundreds, 500s, and 100s.
Now, if you want to actually get your $163 million in $100 bills, you're looking at 163,000 or 16,300 stacks of bills. There's about 240 stacks in each bundle, which means we need 68 bundles like we see they have in the vault. And this takes up 71 cubic feet. I mean, it's a very large pallet for anybody who works in warehouses. It's a double stacked pallet. For those of you that don't work in warehouses, we're talking 532 gallons. This is enough for a hot tub and quarter of another one.
For you Scrooge McDuck types.
If you want to bathe in pure money, that's one way to do it. It is not a small amount if you're doing it in $100 bills. You have to be using 500s and $1,000 bills in order to carry out this kind of money.
Now, we're finding out about this. We discovered, though, that a $1,000 bill is actually worth more than $1,000 if you sell it to a collector instead of using it as legal tender. But that kind of makes it more of a valid possibility for me, because what we know about Benedict as a character is he's very vindictive and petty. And so if at some point a cash collector pissed him off, he very well could have pushed to get their money and make them pay for it in the $1,000 bills, treated as legal tender.
And to be fair, we do know that Benedict is a collector. He's a guy who has his own art museum in his casino.
And it would be real convenient, because they jump up the money amount they have in the vault, depending on if it's a weekend or a fight night. And so he very well could have just a stack of thousands to throw in there on the fight nights to double the amount of money in there without much effort.
So it's a lot of money, but you could easily have those eight people carry out $163 million.
Which is $20 million less than the film made domestically, if you were paying attention.
So, there you go. Plot of the next Ocean's film, calling it now. They steal the gross proceeds from their previous films.
It's become so meta.
Or, if you want the real and best way they carried all this money out of the vault. Because we can tell that the organization of the Strip is not the same as the organization of the Strip we have in our Las Vegas, this takes place in an alternate universe. In this alternate universe, what they instead carried out was unmarked bearer bonds from the Nakatomi Corporation, where the successful thief Hans Gruber had moved to Las Vegas and started his own casino.
I mean, it's a great way to laundry money, isn't it?
It's a fantastic way.
Exceptional way.
And an exceptional casino. You heard it here first.
There you go, guys.
On Plot Spackle. All right. I think we have a bit more time, so anyone have any thoughts about the movie? What are your feelings on Ocean's 11?
I really enjoyed it. I can't remember if I actually saw it in theaters. This would have been slightly before I was driving. So I never really went to see movies before I could actually drive myself to them. Because how embarrassing is it to go and ask, Hey, Mom, I want to go see a movie. Can you take me? So...
See, I didn't have that problem because I lived within walking distance of a theater.
I didn't. I don't still. Well, I guess I could if you're very, you can walk anywhere if you're dedicated enough. I wasn't that dedicated.
Yeah, and so I know I watched that one in theaters, actually. I remember seeing it in theaters, and I enjoyed it. I think it's a lot of fun stylistically. All the actors are a lot of fun. They play great characters, and it's a very archetypical heist movie. I mean, it doesn't twist the formula, but it hits all the points that it's supposed to.
And there's a reason why Oceans keeps getting more and more sequels. 11, 12, 13, and now the upcoming Oceans 8.
But even in that time, like the early 2000s, wasn't there quite a bit of heist movies? There was the Italian Job for sure.
Well, it was the time to remake heist films.
Yeah.
But weren't there other ones that came out around that time?
Mission Impossible would count. That would be a couple of years earlier.
I thought Mission Impossible came out in the 90s.
The first one did, but that's a lot closer to the second one.
Okay. I haven't seen the second one.
So it's within the realm, and Italian Job was remade. It's sometimes there's just like a section of time where certain movies will hit bigger than usual.
Oh, when was it? Like that time when they made Armageddon and Deep Impact, like they made yes, them within it was 6 months Armageddon, of each other.
Deep Impact
and Godzilla, the Core,
Space Cowboys.
Yeah, that summer actually, the Deep Impact, Armageddon, and Godzilla all came out in the same summer, the 98 Godzilla, and so
we don't talk about that Godzilla.
And legally distinct from Godzilla, Godzilla. And there was actually, I remember watching critics review which one destroyed New York better. Like, that was their metric for which was the better film.
But the Ocean's film, I think it actually holds up pretty well.
Yeah, it does.
Between watching it back in 2001 and watching it now, it's still just a good staple heist film.
All right, now, Richard, I believe you've actually watched the original one. I haven't, so I can't really compare or contrast the two.
So, the original one, like I said, it is Frank Sinatra and the Rat Pack. And it's them more like, when you hear people talk about how they weren't necessarily the greatest people.
Oh, yeah.
It's them behaving that way in front of cameras. They're like, lots of people say that they showed up drunk on set often because they were partying in Las Vegas, and you can kind of tell, but it is still a, like, there's a reason Ocean's 11 was chosen to be remade. It was a pretty decent film in general. The heist wasn't quite as complicated. We didn't have floor sensors and electromagnets and things like that to deal with, but it was still a good film.
All right. And,
so yeah, I just remember, sorry to go back to, like, just how it's an enjoyable film. So we watch these movies to research all these plot holes. It gives us an excuse to watch movies. And I was watching this with my wife, and as soon as we finished watching Ocean's 11, she's like, "Hey, I really want to watch Ocean's 12 now. This was a really fun movie." I'm like, "Yeah, let's watch Ocean's 12. Which I know for a fact I saw that one in theaters. I don't think it's as good as Ocean's 11, but it's still a fun movie.
All right, well, thanks for joining us for this episode. Thanks for listening to Plot Spackle. Like us on Facebook.
Follow us on Twitter at Plot Spackle Pod.
And comment what plots you want us to, or what plot holes you want us to fill next.
Or let us know if there's a favorite movie you have, and we'll see how we can ruin it for you.
All right. And next week, join us while we do a...
Next time.
We're
not doing this weekly yet.
Okay. And next time, join us while we do a special version of Plot Spackle called Eric Lives Under a Rock.